So good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to the people sitting in the pews. And a warm welcome to those joining us online. Remember, you are part of our community as well. And welcome to people who happen to listen in later on. This morning's service is a slightly different version of an address. I'm going to talk about the poetry of Hafiz and Rumi, so I'm going to try and let the poems themselves speak to you. I have a few, if anyone was interested in the poems afterwards, I have about 5 copies of them there. I intended to have more, but the printer just wasn't cooperating with me this morning. We begin with our opening words, and these words are from Hafiz. It happens all the time in heaven, and someday it will begin to happen again on the earth, that men and women who are married, and men who are lovers, and women who give each other light, often will get down on their knees, and while tenderly holding their lover's hand, with tears in their eyes, will sincerely speak, saying, "My dear, how can I be more loving to you? How can I be more kind?" Our chalice lighting. We are born to grow in wisdom and to learn to love better. When we do this, we become a blessing to those around us and a light to the world. Now we'll have our first hymn this morning, and it's hymn number 66, "When the Summer Sun is Shining." Hymn number 66. Let us pray. You who are brokenhearted, who awoke today with the winds of despair whistling through your mind, come in. You who are brave but wounded, limping through life and hurting with every step, come into our fellowship. You who are fearful, who live with shadows hovering over your shoulders, come into the embrace of this community. This place is sanctuary, and it is for you. You who are filled with happiness, whose abundance overflows, come in and share. You who walk through life with lightness and grace, who awoke this morning with strength and hope, you who have everything to give, come in and be generous. This place is your calling, a riverbank to channel the sweet waters of your life, the place where you are called to the world's need. Here we offer in love. We receive in gratitude. We make a circle from the great gifts of life and community. Come in. Let everyone join in. And now can we join together to say the prayer Jesus taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Emer is our reader this morning. She tells me she's nervous.
I saw that Bridget was going to talk about poetry, and I'm very lately come to poetry in my life. But there were two that have struck me this year as being very powerful, so I'm going to share them with you. The first is very short. Emily Dickinson. If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain. If I can ease one life the aching, or cool one pain, or help one fainting robin onto his nest again, I shall not live in vain. I was finding that useful in my own life. And then I heard a quote on the Joe Duffy show in relation to the goat in Killorglin. So I may have to rethink it. So I'm going to do the rethinking while I'm reading this one. The Most Important Thing by Julia Fehrenbacher. I am making a home inside myself, a shelter of kindness where everything is forgiven, everything allowed. A quiet patch of sunlight to stretch out without hurry, where all that's been banished and buried is welcomed, spoken, listened to, released. A fiercely friendly place I can claim as my own. I am throwing arms open to the whole of myself, especially the fearful fault-finding, falling apart, unfinished parts, knowing that every seed and weed, every drop of rain, has made the soil richer. I am making a home inside myself, where grace blooms in grand and glorious abundance, a shelter of kindness that grows all the truest things. I whisper hallelujah to the friendly sky. Watch now as I burst into blossom.
It's lovely to see some children in the church today. And we have a story for children of all ages, of course. And this is a story, a once upon a time story, and I've heard it many times in this church, but it's always well worth the retelling. It's a story about a man who lived with his wife and children, and they were fairly poor, but they weren't very well off, and he always wished for a bit more money. And one night, but it wasn't really that important to him, he just thought a little bit more would be nice. And one night he had a dream, and he dreamt he was walking into town on his usual route into town, and that on the route he met a monk, and that he struck up a conversation, chatting with the monk, and suddenly the monk took a big, huge diamond out of his pocket and gave it to him. Now, what we forget is that when a diamond comes out of the ground, it's a heck of a lot bigger than the ones we wear on our finger. This is a very big diamond, and he was absolutely amazed, woke up and thought that was a lovely dream. A few days later, he's walking into town to do some shopping, and suddenly he sees coming towards him a monk, and he thought, gosh, this is really like the monk in my dreams. And they stopped to chat because it was a country road and there were only the two of them on it. And the man said to him, you're not going to believe this, but you know, I dreamt about meeting a monk exactly on this stretch of road a few days ago. And the monk says, oh, did you? Imagine that now you've met me. And he said, what did you dream about, the monk? And he says, well, he says, I dreamt that you took a huge, big diamond, the biggest diamond I've ever seen in my life, out of your pocket and gave it to me. And the monk said, oh, he said, you mean something like this? And there he took out a huge, big diamond. The man's eyes nearly fell out of his head. And the monk said, well, I found this up the road and I just thought it looked interesting. Would you like it? And the man said, yes, please. And he ran home to his wife and he said, you're not going to believe it. That dream I had, it's happened. And he gave me the diamond. And here is the diamond. They were delighted. Then, of course, the question arose, well, where do we keep this diamond? You know, says somebody stole it. So he decided, do you know where I'll put it? I'll put it under my pillow and then no thief will come in and get it during the night. Now his pillow was not an extra special one. It was pretty thin. And during the night, as the night wore on, he could feel the stone sticking into his head, annoying his ears. He didn't get a wink of sleep that night. The next day they hid it somewhere on the dug a hole in the floor and they decided to cover it with a chair. And then he thought, no, someone might realize it. I'll sleep on the chair. So he was sleeping on the chair. Didn't get a night's sleep that night. And this went on and on, trying to find a safe place to hide this diamond. After several nights' sleep, he suddenly realized, do you know what? This diamond is not making me happy. And he went and he found the monk and he said, please take the diamond back. And he said, in exchange, will you give me the wisdom that allowed you to part with that diamond so easily? Nice story. Now we're going to have our second hymn this morning and it's hymn number 326. I don't know if we're familiar with it, so maybe Trevor would play it through for us. Or is it a very familiar hymn, Trevor? Yeah, play a verse anyway. Thank you. From my reading, I've chosen a piece from a book. It's called The Things You Notice Only When You Slow Down, and it's by Haman Sunim. And it's from the Buddhist tradition. But one of the things we were brought up with was this life is a trial. You're meant to be miserable most of your life. If you're not being miserable, you're not being good. And Buddhists actually say that the natural condition is to be happy. And this is reading is to tell you what to do and how to deal with those times when you feel sad or despondent or just low in yourself. What should you do? Quietly observe the feeling without trying to change it. It will change on its own. As if gazing at a tree in the backyard, or as if sitting by a river and watching the water flow by, quietly observe your feelings as if they were external to you. If you observe your feelings in this way, for just 3 minutes even, you will notice their energy and texture slowly changing. Feelings are often born out of a matrix of conditions beyond our control. Just like we can't control the weather or your boss's mood, or you can't control the feelings of your body. They are just passing through like clouds in the sky, and they too will dissipate on their own. But if you take them too seriously and start internalizing them as part of your identity, then you will resuscitate them every time you think about them. Remember that you are neither your feelings, nor are you the story your mind tells you about yourself to make sense of those feelings. You are the vast silence that knows the emergence of feelings and when they disappear. People ask, how can I clear my mind if I want to meditate? The more I try, they say, the more thoughts seem to come to me. And this is completely natural, because trying to clear your mind is a thought. Do not try to get rid of your thoughts. It won't work. Instead, witness the emergence of a thought. Witness the disappearance of a thought. The moment you become aware of it, the mind quiets and becomes clear. This prayer is based on the words of the Persian poet Rumi. The Persian poet Rumi challenges us. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshipper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come, yet again come. And we come from rich heritages of liturgy and pomp. We come from burning legacies of angry gods and threats of hellfire. We come just as we are. We come with exuberant and joyful hearts, eager to witness to others. We come bereft of the goodness of life, wandering, hesitant. We come just as we are. We come in the bloom of youth, ready to explore new truths. We come ready to sit and be nourished for an hour. We come with grey in our hair and experiences to share. We come just as we are. We come to the place we never knew before, yet we recognize it as coming home. We come to the place that has been home for most of our lives. We come just as we are, to join our brothers and sisters as members of one family in this beloved home, our hands and hearts at peace and outstretched. Come, yet again come. Let all of us come into the silence and the peace of this community. This morning's address is the poetry of Rumi and Hafiz. Poetry holds a special place in the Islamic tradition. Muslims believe that over time, God sent many prophets to humanity, but that the Prophet Muhammad would be the final prophet God sent. The religion inspired by Muhammad's life experiences is today embraced by over 1 billion people in all parts of the world. In his lifetime, many miracles were attributed to the prophet. It was a risk religious leaders ran, I think, that they were attributed with miracles. But with one exception, Muhammad denied ever having created a miracle. And that exception is the sacred book of Islam, the Quran, because in its original classical Arabic, the Quran is said to be the most exquisite poetry. And that's why Muslims like to read it in its traditional Arabic. Jalal al-Rumi and Hafiz were renowned poets, both of them from the Muslim tradition. They wrote in Persian. Today the poetry is appreciated by peoples of all faiths and backgrounds. They lived about 700 years ago, the two of them. In his early career, Rumi was a noted Islamic scholar and a judge, while the name Hafiz means one who can recite the Quran by heart. It is said that while still a child, Hafiz achieved that remarkable feat that he could, sort of like learning the New Testament off word by word. Hafiz was born, lived in, and is buried in Shiraz in Iran. Both Rumi and Hafiz were Sufis, and a Sufi is someone who belongs to the mystic tradition of Islam. Sufis seek direct experience of the divine through meditation, prayer, fasting, and in the case of Islam, through dance. Some of you who have been on holidays may have seen whirling dervishes. They originated in Sufi Islam, and they're still part of Sufi Islam, where they go round and around in a circle, and it brings them to a different mental state. Translating between languages is always difficult, particularly so for poetry. And despite the difficulties of translation, the differences between religions and cultures, and the hundreds of years have passed since the poetry was written, the poems still sing to the heart. Hafiz was an important influence on Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. And Thoreau and Emerson were members of the Transcendental Club in Boston in the 1800s. And of course, the Transcendentalists in Boston were an amazing influence on modern Unitarianism. So there's a thread going from Sufi Islam to the Transcendentalists to modern Unitarianism. The novelist Arthur Conan Doyle had Sherlock Holmes speak the words that there was as much sense in Hafiz as there was in Horace. Horace being a Roman poet who lived before the time of Jesus. We know a little bit more about the life of Rumi. He was born in what is now Afghanistan, and he was born in 1207. And his family spoke Persian. He died aged 66. He was a noted Islamic scholar and a judge. He was the imam or leader of his community. He was a very learned teacher. One day, Rumi met a man called Shams Tabrizi. The influence of Shams made him leave behind the life of a scholar and a preacher and instead seek this knowledge of God through direct experience. Rumi wrote about how meeting Shams had changed his life. He said, of the scholar and preacher I once was, not a single speck remains. Love has taken away all my practices and habits. Instead, it has filled me with poetry. And there's a big mystery about what happened to Shams. For several months, Rumi and Shams were inseparable. We're never told if they're actually lovers, but there was a great deal of love between them. And it is thought that Rumi's son may have been involved in the disappearance of Shams. Rumi and Shams were together. There was a knock at the back door. Shams answered the door, walked outside, and he was never seen again. So this morning I'm going to share some of my favorite Sufi poems with you and say a little bit about why I chose the poems. The first two poems are about that lovely guilt of sin that we were brought up with. Because much of what the hierarchy spoke about sin is utter nonsense. Religious leaders are very expert at making us feel guilty and portraying God as a vengeful, judgmental person. And as a person, they judge him, they portray God as a person. But a mystical approach to religion in the poetry of Rumi and Hafiz puts a very different slant on religion and God. And the first poem is called Now Is the Time, and it's by Hafiz. Now is the time to know that all that you do is sacred. Now, why not consider a lasting truce with yourself and God? Now is the time to understand that all your ideas of right and wrong were just a child's training wheels to be laid aside when you finally live with veracity and love. Now is the time for the world to know that every thought and action is sacred. That this is the time for you to compute the impossibility that there is anything but grace. Now is the season to know that everything that you do is sacred. And Rumi wrote similarly. He said, out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and right-doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about ideas and language. Even the phrase each other doesn't seem to make any sense. In another poem, Rumi wrote, today, like every day, we wake up empty and scared. Don't open the door to your study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the earth. Again, that contradicts the busy life that we feel that we're on a treadmill of working. Rumi's advice to do something creative, something that you love, is wonderful. And this advice, again, is reflected in a poem by Hafiz called All the Hemispheres. Leave the familiar for a while. Let your senses and bodies stretch out like a welcome season onto the wind, the meadows and shores and hills. Open up the roof. Make a new watermark on your excitement and love. Like a blooming night flower, bestow your vital fragrance of happiness and giving upon our intimate assembly. Change rooms in your mind for a day. All the hemisphere in existence lie beside an equator in your heart. Greet yourself in your thousand other forms as you mount the hidden tide and travel back home. All the hemispheres in heavens are sitting round a fire, chatting while stitching themselves together into the great circle inside of you. I love that line, change rooms in your mind for a day. You know, often we are like the old hamster on a wheel, replaying the same old storylines, same old workday, the same old habits. And usually the stories are the ones that are not good, the ones of regret, the ones of hurt, the ones of anger. So today we decide, at some stage, today or during the week, we change rooms in our mind for a day. A different poem is the poem The Guest House, and Rumi wrote this one. And this reminds us that everything we experience comes to us for a reason. And he tells us that we must own our thoughts, our experiences, and our actions. You know, sometimes we don't. We like to forget what we did wrong. We like to maybe not remember that we were so miserable to somebody, or whatever. But this one is The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful to whoever comes, because each of them has been sent as a guide from a beyond. Religions do tend to emphasize the shortcomings of humanity. Humans are unworthy. In common with our shortcomings and foolishness, we have a sense of the mystery that is beyond us, but deep within us. And these themes of foolishness and yet longing for something deeper are beautifully addressed in this poem by Hafiz called My Sweet Crushed Angel. You have not danced so badly, my dear, trying to hold hands with the beautiful one. You have waltzed with great style, my sweet crushed angel, to have ever neared God's heart at all. Our partner is notoriously difficult to follow, and even his best musicians are not always easy to hear. So what if the music has stopped for a while? So what if the price of admission to the divine is out of reach tonight? So what, my dear, if you do not have the ante to gamble for real love? The mind and the body are famous for holding the heart ransom, but Hafiz knows the beloved's eternal habits. Have patience, for he will not be able to resist your longing for long. You have not danced so badly, my dear, trying to kiss the beautiful one. You have actually waltzed with tremendous style, oh my sweet crushed angel. There we are. We're not awful sinners. We are crushed angels. Of course, there have been books of theology written about God, God's existence, attributes, justice, judgments. We know what it would sink a ship, the library of books on theology. Hafiz's version of God is very simple. He said, every child has known God, not the God of names, not the God of don'ts, not the God who ever does anything weird, but the God who knows only four words and repeats them, saying, come dance with me. Come dance. Lovely Sufi poetry. I hope you enjoy them. There's a few copies on the table, not many. My printer didn't cooperate with me. But if anyone wanted to take them, they're there. Now we're going to have our third hymn, and it's hymn number 115, God of Grace and God of Glory. Notices. Firstly, thank you, Trevor, for the music. It's always lovely to hear you play. Great news. Fair trade, tea and coffee served downstairs in the vestry after the service. Great. Copies of Oscult magazine for August is available on the table outside. And please give a home to an unsubscribing magazine or a Unitarian magazine. Wednesday lunchtime service of reflection begins at about 1:05 till 1:35. It's available in the church and online. Next Sunday, the service will be taken by Dr. Martin Pulbrook, while some of the rest of us are off to Kylemore Abbey. And we're going to be in the beautiful Gothic church in the grounds of Kylemore Abbey. And there'll be Unitarian from California, Unitarians from Cork, Unitarians from Northern Ireland and England. And it's just going to be a lovely day. For those travelling by train, I have a leaflet on the table, right? So if you just want to take it, if you're going by train. But if everyone could just let our secretary, Trish, know that you're going, the plan is that we get a rough idea of numbers and we pay the fee into Kylemore Abbey for the numbers going. So we just need to know, have a rough idea of that. Next month is September, and it's 3 years since I've had a holiday. I feel like I've been talking for 3 years. So I'm going to give the vocal cords a rest. I had planned on having Bill over to take services, but I was chatting to them, and Bill and Morag's kitchen floor is collapsed into the basement. It was not gone yet, but they need to get the builders in, so they can't come. So I need people to volunteer or be pressed ganged into taking services in September. We're going to have our final hymn now, and it's hymn number 148, Let Freedom Span Both East and West. After the blessing, Trevor will play some voluntary music, and then Denise wants to say a word. So our final hymn, number 148. Our closing blessings are two quotations from Hafiz. And the first one says, I wish I could show you, when you are lonely or in darkness, the astonishing light of your own being. And the second one is, the place that you are right now God circled on a map for you.